This is Transcripts.
The state of transness in America, the state of blackness in America, the state of sexuality in America, everything that I care about, housing, discrimination, education.
Sharing space, sharing story, sharing experience. And that is the work. That is the work that I'm so honored to stand here and lift up for you today.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Hope you're hanging in there. I'm really glad we made it through this last week of election, chaos. But I really wanted to use this time and this platform to focus on a topic that is not going away no matter who the next president is, at least without a mass movement. And that topic is the violence that people face when they're incarcerated, and especially the violence that's enacted on trans and gender nonconforming people in prison. So this week, I really wanted to share a show that's doing incredible work to bring the most impacted voices to the airwaves. It's this little community radio show called Kiteline from WFHB Community Radio in South Central Indiana. And I love finding shows like this that are doing this unexpected work, especially in quote-unquote red states where, you know, you expect that radical politics are nowhere to be found, but actually they're everywhere. And I really hope that this tape reminds us all that there's no such thing as flyover country, there's no such thing as a sacrifice zone, and no one is disposable. So huge shout out to Kiteline from WFHB for letting us use this tape. We'll have a link in the show notes for where you can check out more episodes. And before we get started, a content warning. This episode contains description of rape, police torture, and other forms of prison violence. So please take care of yourself.
I have a lot of friends that are masculine presenting or GNC trans, and we catch more cases in there than anyone else.
Welcome to Kiteline, a weekly radio program from WFHB that focuses on issues in the prison system and beyond.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here on Kiteline, we hope to share these words across the prison walls.
Our episode this week is a conversation between Rojas and Cyrus. They talk to us about the conditions of transgender and gender nonconforming, or GNC, prisoners in the California prison system and on the outside. Subject to increased surveillance and retaliation from both cops on the outside and correctional officers on the inside, Rojas speaks about what they were subjected to while within the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, or CDCR. Rojas and Cyrus also talk about CCWP, the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, an organization that, in their words, quote, monitor and challenge the abusive conditions inside California women's prisons. We fight for the release of women and trans prisoners. We support women and trans prisoners in their process of re-entering the community, unquote. We'll hear more from them in a later episode, but for now, here's Rojas and Cyrus.
I'm Rojas. My pronouns are they, them, or just Rojas. I work for the Young Women's Freedom Center. I've been a member of CCWP since 2015. P has my heart, you know, like this is how I got into this work. Like, I knew the work I was doing in prison, like organizing in prison. I didn't know, like, I'd get out and do that. I mean, I knew that I was going to try to do this kind of work, like with CCWP. I just didn't know how far we'd get, or that I'd even get a job in organizing or around this work. Like, I'm a lead organizer for the Young Women's Freedom Center. I love it. You know, I'm getting paid to do this work, so that feels good, and I get to bring other people in.
I'm Cyrus. I organize with the California Coalition for Women Prisoners in LA. Mm-hmm. And TAG, the trans advocacy group, and Rojas and I know each other through CCWP and working on campaigns together, particularly the campaign that Rojas has been a lead on, which is Me Too Behind Bars, which is about kind of looking at and fighting the ways that particularly a trans and gender nonconforming, but also queer people in general and women experience sexual violence in SAG prisons, and how sexual violence functions as a form of state violence. But I actually never, you know, Rojas and I are friends and I've known each other a while now, but I've never asked you how you first got connected with CCWP, or like what you first thought when you started working with CCWP, and how you connected with the group.
I was abused by the cops. I was threatened with rape and torture and sexually harassed because of being GNC. And when this incident happened, it was on the 14th year of my sentence. It was a really bad incident, and it's the first time I ever called home and said, hey, you know, I had never told my family what went on in that place. You don't want your family thinking that you're in there getting tortured, you know. So I called my family, and they called a friend of mine that I knew was in this work, Dolores Canales, and Dolores called Colby from CCWP, and next thing you know, I had a visit, like, immediately, because I wasn't I wasn't able to see a doctor, and, like, my finger had been broke, and CCWP had started advocating for me, calling the prison, I mean, getting money together so that my family could fly over and see me, actually allowing my family to stay at their home. Sarah Kushner let my family even borrow a car and drive out to see me. So that was surprising for me. Like, never did I think some people were just going to help like that. It just doesn't even seem real, you know? I'm like, whoa, I just wanted people to maybe call up there and say, we know what's going on, stop it, you know. I was facing a lot of retaliation. So when CCWP came in to see me, things, like, changed, at least when they were around, at least visiting, you know. That's how we got connected. And, I mean, I had a visit 3 times a month after that. And during my sentence, I only had, my entire sentence, I probably only had 10 visits. I did 15 years. You know, my family don't have a lot of money or anything. They couldn't come see me often, and I was fine with that. I actually even had visiting taken away from me for 5 years. It was crazy. Like, I was getting legal visits, family visits. I had so much support, and that's how we connected. I, like, built relationships with these folks in CCWP, so that's how we got connected.
I feel like the thing you said about visiting getting taken away, mm-hmm. It's like there's already so much in place that means that trans and GNC people inside are isolated, mm-hmm. Even the fact that so many people, like, are connected to their families. Mm-hmm. And then inside, when obviously trans people are dealing with, like, the most harassment and violence from the guards and getting all these write-ups, and then probably going to get visiting taken away at higher rates.
Yeah, too. Visiting gets taken away from us. Law library, the library. It's like you want to go out and meet someone and get a girlfriend, and it's like you're accused. I mean, you can be walking with anyone to the law library. Like me, oftentimes I get sent back, and it's like, no, we know you're coming out here to meet your girlfriend. No, I'm not. But that's just something they do to us. When they took my visits, it's because I had caught a case in there that I had beat. And it doesn't matter if you win your case in court. I had picked up a few cases in there, but I beat them all. You know, I was fortunate enough to beat them all. Like, we get accused more of being, like, I guess the cops say they're, like, intimidated by us, or we're aggressive. And, like, we catch more cases in there than anyone else. Like, it's just, I have a lot of friends that are masculine presenting or GNC trans, and we're the ones that get 4 or 5 more years, 10 more years added on. That's what they do to us. We're targeted.
And I feel like that's been such a huge part of, or like something I've learned so much from you, and something that's been such a huge part of your fight, is being, like, supporting trans people inside isn't just about making sure that people get the hormones, the name change, the honorifics. It's also about the fact that, like, the stuff that's happening on the streets with, like, police targeting and heightened surveillance and harassment, all of that stuff is going to keep happening with the guards inside.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's like they want to let you know that they're not worried about it, You know, like, CDCR are so powerful. There was even staff coming in, like, in regular clothes and pulling other incarcerated people out, talking to them, telling them that I was a piece of shit. They were my roommates that lived with me that were just queer and just, like, cis women. They would tell them to stop hanging out with me. And this, like I said all the time, it's not only my story, it's all of us. They're always watching us. I mean, you step out of line, they're going to get you. They get physical with us, you know? It's like one of the things they do, they put you in a dress and they're like, yeah, I'm going to put your ass in a dress. And when they handcuff us, like me, oftentimes they pull up my arm. I don't know if anyone's ever twisted your arm. It makes you bend over, so they kind of like walk you across the yard, bent over. They type things like, you think you're a man? Like, I'll show you what a man is. I got something hard for your ass. And, hey, Rojas, calm down. Do you really think you get my hard? You know, and I'm like, ugh, just. But it happens to all of us. Like, it happens to all of us. There's so many of us that are now, like, in contact and talking about what goes on out here and how it still happens with the cops. Like, they could pull us over and, like me, they pulled me over at gunpoint and my car broke down one day and three times in one day, you know, and each time the officers are just with me, you know, it's because of what I look like, you know, it's because of who I am. And we all have similar stories, you know, it still goes on. It happened before we went to prison, it happens in prison, and it happens when you get out of prison. You know, the parole officers do it, like, just having probation and all this time. Kind of seems like we're always being surveilled, you know. Which we are, you know. More than other folks in prison. Definitely, like, they're always, like, watching you. Like, I can't even give someone a hug. Like, a friend of mine, her son passed away. And I remember hugging her, you know, like she just broke and she was hugging me. And I was accused, over familiarity. Yeah, and chowchilla. Yeah, and CCWF. So it just happens all the time.
Do you want to talk more about how you're in contact with people and more about how you're sharing stories with other people?
Yes, we meet up and we kind of have a little healing circle our own where we can talk about what's happened to us inside of that place and feel comfortable and know, like, hey, it's all right, you know? And it's hard to talk about it with other people. Like, some of my friends can't, like, they're, like, not in that place yet, but they still want to talk about it, like, amongst themselves.
Because you have a lot of people that you love that are still inside.
Oh. So many.
And I feel like you really hold on to that. Like, how much do you talk to people, your loved ones inside, about the work that you're doing?
Oh, often. All the time. People are always calling me, telling me what's going on in there. Like, yesterday, someone's like called me while I was at UCLA, and someone just got beat, and their shirt was off, and they left them in the yard like that for a while. You know, you're in cuffs, your shirt's off. It's happened to me. Like, instead of covering you up, they'll walk you around like that, kind of like they want to show you you're a woman, you know? Like, they want you to be exposed. That's happened to me. Like, I was actually in a fight, and someone pulled off my shirt, and the officers walked me across the yard. The yard's pretty big, you know? Shirtless, and we're making comments about me, and, yeah, like, oh, yeah, you don't want to be without a shirt now, right? Yeah, like, now everybody knows, like, you know. They like to let you know, like, you know, you're a woman. So they parade you around like that. I feel so bad because there's so many people that contact me, and I'm like, we're trying. Like, there's not that many people in CCWP. Like, there's 4,000 people in that prison. Like, we can't go. We try, like, and we write names down for as many people as possible, but, like, it's so often, it happens all the time.
I was talking to someone yesterday who said that just on the books, there's 350 trans-identified people at CCWF. Mm-hmm. But that's only even people who, you know, are reporting or being counted by CDCR as trans. So there's obviously so many more people.
Yeah.
GNC.
Yeah, so many more. That's, I mean, it feels like that's why we're in there. That's why we get the longer sentences.
Well, Rojas is part of a plaintiff in a lawsuit, which you can talk more about if you want. But some of the, one of the plaintiffs is still incarcerated, right?
Yeah,
or two, Isaac
and Yvette. Isaac and Yvette, but yeah. They separated our cases.
Right.
But, like, I'm sometimes a little bit confused with how much I can say.
Yeah.
But, I talk about it. I talk about what happened. It's the truth. That's what really happened.
Yeah.
We were tortured for 11 hours. It got so bad that I hung myself to get it to stop, to get other staff to come to the program office, and they were cutting off one of my roommate's clothing after they had already stripped us out twice, as if when we were in the cage somehow we, I don't know what, but it was just to have us naked and, I don't know, make fun of us or me. There was men that stripped me out. It was actually a woman at first, and when I was, they make you grab your ankles and cough, you know, and you have to squat down, get back up, cough, and then there was three men. And it was a really small restroom. I mean, that incident happened because we were organizing on the yard. The cops were starting to beat us really bad, and, like, the harassment got so bad. We started writing it down and logging everything that happened on the yard. So the cops kind of got wind of that. They seen that we were actually standing up for each other and saying, hey, I will be your witness. And we were targeted because of that. And they were trying to get my roommates to stop talking to me, get them. They were asking them if they were my girlfriends. One of them actually had been my partner at one time, but it was like maybe like a year and a half before this incident. So we were all being harassed. Them for being my friend and me for being me.
It's only in the 70s that people inside prison even started being able to, mm-hmm. you know, file lawsuits against the state, because before that they weren't even, prisoners weren't even seen as, like, legal subjects. I think people in prison barely are seen as legal subjects now. But what can happen if there's a suit against the state by a prisoner or a former prisoner, the presiding judge in the court where the case will be heard, before anything, gets to go through all of the evidence and decide whether they think it's legitimate,
mm-hmm.
which is something that's specific to prisoner-led lawsuits. So what's been happening is that even though they've been building this case around Rojas's experience and a few the three other plaintiffs, though the cases have been separated, saying that there was, you know, cruel and unusual treatment and punishment against them, there's a really conservative judge who keeps saying, no, this isn't legitimate, this doesn't constitute cruel and unusual punishment, this doesn't constitute cruel and unusual punishment. And they keep being like, what about this, what about this, what about this? And the judge keeps on barring the case from moving forward, which is like just another, if we need any more evidence that the legal system is rigged sham. So a lot of what the work we've been doing as a campaign is being like, we know that, and you know, and you say this all the time, that a lawsuit isn't going to change a culture of systemic abuse and violence. The only thing that's going to change is getting, you know, getting rid of prisons.
Yeah.
But, like, how can we use something like a lawsuit to kind of, like, organize and work and build a movement around and connect people across California who are dealing with things like this but maybe in isolation from one another? As we wait for the lawsuit to move forward, and also with the knowledge that even if the lawsuit does move forward, it won't fix all the problems, how can, like, we kind of rally around the lawsuit as a way of like bringing people together.
We all want like more people to actually care about what's happened to us. Like, we know this lawsuit isn't going to change the culture of that place. It's prison. We already know there's no fixing that. But I feel like this is the beginning of something, of people willing to come forward, because it's hard. And when you're alone and you challenge staff or you decide to like be a whistleblower, like the retaliation is, I mean, it's crazy. It feels like you're not going to get out of that place. It feels like you're either going to die, like, or you're going to stay longer. Like, I was promised I'd be there longer. I mean, it may not change the culture of that place, but at least, like, we can have more people join the fight and know that, hey, we have your back. We'll advocate for you. We'll, like, just getting folks to understand that they're not alone and it is going to be hard. And we tell them that, like, you know, we're really careful, like, dealing with folks on the inside because we know what it's like. Like, we all know they're probably going to get beat. They're probably going to rip the pictures of your family. This is all stuff that's happened to me. Just getting other folks to come forward so we can get, like, I mean, so our movement can, like, grow. And they know that we're just not going to take it, you know? We're not going to just keep your secret any longer. Like, I don't know where, I mean, I have a lot of hopes. Like, what, I hope this will happen. I hope that will happen.
What are your hopes?
Damn, I hope that we can complain to an outside organization besides CDCR. That's the scary thing, complaining about CDCR to CDCR is, like, you're not going to win ever. Like, they're going to laugh at you. You're going to feel, like, stupid for even trying.
Yeah.
Other folks that are not impacted, that work with impacted folks, I don't ever feel the way I do, like, when I'm with CCWP. Like, it doesn't feel like, I don't know, it's just different, you know? It's different. They're more just like, it doesn't seem like they care, and then you don't really want to, you're trying to get them to care, but then when you see their faces, like, just staring at you, you're like, oh, God. You know, it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
I love CCWP. All the time, I'm like, you know, they volunteer their time, like, folks that are not impacted, like, to come and work for us and visit us. Like, it's all, like, on volunteer time. It's not like they're getting paid for it. So that's the crazy thing, you know? And other folks, it's not like that, you know? But CCWP, it's like they fight with their heart, you know? Like, they really listen to what's happening. And it's not just, like, research. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, okay, so there's 10 of you in the room, and, you know, 10 out of 10 have been through this. And you're like, you know, it's more than that, you know? It's not just us, it's our families. And CCWP, I mean, they get sad with, we're all like, someone gets beat, and it's like, I can call anyone from CCWP and say, hey, you know, this just happened, and we all feel it. It's not like that with other folks, you know? A lot of people, they're just about reform, and it makes you feel weird when it's like, it's just the stuff that people are fighting sometimes. It just doesn't make sense, because it's like, oh yeah, they should have let you should have been able to see the doctor after your bones broke. But, like, really? They shouldn't have, you know, it should be like, no, this shouldn't be happening. What? All of you, it's not okay. But I guess it's because they're not trans or GNC or queer, so it's a lot different. Other organizations are a lot different.
It's funny, I think almost everyone in CCWP who's not directly impacted is gay or trans. But then, like, our inside members, there's actually a really wide range. Like, a lot of people are queer and trans, and then there's also, like, older women who are, like,
yeah.
Christian and not gay at all, but they're, like, totally cool
yeah.
with it. You know, like, I have deep relationships with people inside who are, like, elderly women who I never would have thought I would be so close to, but they've, like, been, and they've, like, we've literally, like, been close through my transition, you know? And, like, the love that I've been met with has, like, been, so I'm gonna get emotional.
I get emotional, too, sometimes.
Has just been, like, so, like, I feel like that's the thing about it, is, like, the love goes both ways. Like, I have been, I'm not from a family that was impacted by prisons, you know that, but, like, the love is just, like, it's, but goes in all directions, and, like, I'm lifted up and changed, and, like, my life is made better, and, like, I can imagine different futures, and, like, fight for them because of the way that I'm loved in return, you know?
But it almost feels like, you know, I'm directly impacted, and I feel my family's system impacted, you know? I'm in there. But I feel like that about CCWP, too. They care so much, like, it's, like, in the, it hurts them as well. Like, I feel like they're impacted, you know? It's, like...
Well, that's interesting. I think, like, the idea, the whole idea of, like, direct impact is really kind of interesting, because it's, like, well, yeah, certain people are directly impacted because we know that prisons are, like, racist and transphobic and classist and ableist and all this stuff. But then also, like, once you love people, then you're a part of each other.
Right.
And then, like, what idea of family do we have, you know? Like, I do feel like now people inside are my family. So it's a little confusing.
Yeah, no, seriously. Like, the system has got to you too now. Do you know what I mean? It can reach anyone. That's what's so crazy about it. Like, as long as you care about someone, damn, even if people just cared about us as being human, like, I think they'd be impacted too. Like, that's something, it'd be on your mind. If you knew the horrible things that go on in that place, and then, especially us, we're like at the bottom of the barrel, like, we're getting the worst of it all. I'm talking about trans and GNC folks. Yeah, and you all come in, and you have to think about it. Like, can you imagine if you're in a place and you're getting beat just for being Cyrus, you know? And they're telling you, like, you're not who you are when you know who you are, you know? So, yeah, I definitely think you're impacted as well. Like, I think as long as you care.
Well, sometimes when you really love people,
yeah,
it feels like what's happening to them is happening to you. Which I feel like you're not supposed to say or something. Like, I feel like that's, like, not politically correct. Like, you're supposed to be like, it's not my experience, it's not my experience. And that's true.
That's so backwards to me, though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that. Like, I just don't understand that. I'm like, man, my family's impacted. My friends, you know what I mean? I'm still going through. I feel like Christina's system impacted because of me. Like, I'm still going through a lot. And people that have to be there for me and, like, see what I'm going through. Like, it hurts you when you see your family going through something. You're impacted. It's, like, I know, yes, give us our place to talk. I understand that. But also, like, how it affects everyone else, too. That's what I believe. Like, you know, same way I'm hurt. Like, I have people in there that, even people I don't know, it hurts. I know what's going on, so it hurts. Like, I'm impacted by what's happening to them.
You can find out more about the California Coalition for Women Prisoners at womenprisoners.org. This has been KiteLine. Anyone can reach us via our P.O. Box, KiteLine Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. KiteLine is intended as a means of communication between people across prison walls. KiteLine, WFHB, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the opinions expressed on the show. Please join us every Friday for more stories, news, and insights about the impact of prison on our community. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for listening, and please go check out KiteLine on WFHB, volunteer-powered and listener-supported radio, holding it down in Indiana since 1993. The Transcripts Podcast is a project of the Treader Transgender Oral History Project at the University of Minnesota Libraries. We're funded by the Tawani Foundation, the Minnesota Humanities Innovation Lab, and Virginia Humanities. I'm producer Kasia Sadare. See you soon.